नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Chapter 10, Opulence of the Absolute. Text number 2.
Name Viduh Suraganam,
Name Viduh Suraganam,
Prabhavam Namaharshayah,
Prabhavam Namaharshayah,
Aham Adirhi Devanam,
Aham Adirhi Devanam,
Maharshinam Cha Sarvashah,
Maharshinam
Cha Sarvashah. Neither the hosts of demigods nor the great sages know my origin or opulences. For in every respect I am the source of the demigods and sages.
Yoma Majamanadim Cha
Yoma Majamanadim Cha
Veti Loka Maheshwaram
Veti Loka Maheshwaram
Asam Murah Samartyeshu
Asam Murah Samartyeshu
Sarva Papai Pramuchyate
Sarva Papai Pramuchyate.
He who knows me as the unborn, as the beginningless, as the Supreme Lord of all the worlds, he only, undiluted among men, is free from all sins. So this chapter is entitled The Opulences of the Absolute. And here Lord Krishna is revealing his identity about who he is. Before telling about all his opulences, in these few verses Krishna is establishing his supremacy. We will see that after Krishna speaks with Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita, 10.8, 9, 10, 11, at once Arjuna accepts Krishna's supremacy by quoting those million-dollar verses. Param Brahma Param Dhamma Pavitram Paramam Bhavan Purusham Shashvatam Divyam Adidevamajam Vidum Ahustvam Rishaya Sarve Deva Rishet Naradastata Ajito Devalo Vyaso Svayam Seva Pradishine Sarvaveta Dhritam Manye Janma Vayasa Keshava Nahite Bhagavan Gatyam Vidur Deva Nadanava. Those three verses. So those are following the Sarishtati immediately. And that goes to show that it did not take much effort on Krishna's part to make Arjuna become convinced that Krishna is supreme. Krishna did not have to show his Visvarupa Darshan, which he showed in the 11th chapter. Even before that, Arjuna accepted Krishna's supremacy simply by hearing these few verses in the beginning of 10th chapter. Because here Krishna is answering the most important question about the source of everything that be. Who is the source of everything? Is it Shiva? Or is it Brahma? Or is one of the three presiding deities of Gunas? Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh? Or is it Ganesha? Is it Kartikeya? So there are so many followers of so many different gods. And some people, in order to keep peace of mind, say that all paths lead to the same goal. So Prabhupada writes about this question in his books. If all paths lead to the same goal, then why do we find Krishna saying, Yanti Deva Vrata Deva, Pitrum Yanti Pitru Vrata, Pudan Yanti Putteja Yanti Madhyajana Pimam. Those who worship me will come to me. Those who worship the Devatas will go to Devatas. Those who worship the materialists will go to the materialists. those worship their forefathers will go to the forefathers. So Krishna clearly says that there are different devatas and who are of different categories and different levels. And the absolute truth is one supreme from whom everything comes. As here Prabhupada explains in the purport, actually I am going to do text 3 first and then come to 2 later. In text 3, Prabhupada explains that here Krishna talks about Ajam, Yom Aam, Ajam, Anadimcha. The Jiva is also called by the name Aja. Anybody can cite about where the Jiva is called as also Aja. In Chinese chapter? Ajo Nitya Shashvatoyam Purano Ahanyate Hanyamanachare. That the Aja represents the Jivatma. Whereas in Amrita verse says, Ajovyayam, what is it? Ajovyas and Ajayatma. Bhutanam Vishwatins. That's the meaning of Ajay is unborn Supreme God. So here Prabhupada says, here the Lord is described with the word Aja, meaning unborn, but he is distinct from the living beings who are described in the second chapter as Aja. Lord is different from the living entities who are taking birth and dying due to material attachment. So we can also call the Jivatma as Aja and the Lord also as Aja. But both these Ajas are two different types of Aja. Two different types of unborn. Why? When we talk of the Jivatma as Aja, we are talking about the pure nature of the spirit soul. But still, the soul develops attachment in this world and is reborn and he dies and again he is reborn and he dies. Whereas when Krishna is concerned, he has no birth, he is never born. So somebody may argue, Krishna was born to Devaki, the womb of Devaki. Was he not born? How can you call Krishna as Aja, unborn? He is also like any of us born in this world. So in answer to that, the scriptures explain that he was not born as an ordinary child. When he appeared from the womb of Devaki, he was still in 400 form of Vishnu. He showed the 400 form of Vishnu with Shankar Chakra Gada Padma in that huge, great form. And then he turned into a small child just to give pleasure to Devaki and Vasudeva. Because Devaki became afraid that if the Lord appears like this in Shankar Chakra Gada Padma, with conscious and disc and everything, people will not believe that I gave birth to this child. People will ridicule me. And besides that, it will be difficult for me to hide my child somewhere from concern. So in order to protect my child from concern, let my child be a small baby. Then Lord, in order to please his devotee Devaki, Lord assumed the form of a small child. So Lord's birth is not ordinary. In fact, Kunti Maharani also prays. She is saying that Lord appears in many families at different times. She is saying, Ajasya, Akartur, Atmana. Ajasya, you are never born. And you are Akartur, you never do any activities. But still, Suryam, Nara, Rishishu, Yadasu, Taratyanta Vidambaram. You appear in the family of sages, in the family of animals like Kurmavatar, Matsyavatar, Varahavatar, Satyavatar, Narsingavatar, like that. And Tiryan, Nara, Rishu, sometimes you appear like a human being. And in all these cases, a warning is given to us that one should not think of these avatars of the Lord to be like that of an ordinary human being. These are all written in all the scriptures that it is Lord Himself who comes as Narsingha Dev. Even amongst Greeks, they worship a form called a Cynix. Actually, in Greek literature, it is written that Lord is half man, half lion. And they have made the head of a man and the body of a lion. Sphinx, they call it Sphinx. So, it is there in all the worldwide, when people worship different forms, they are all written in the scriptures. Originally, they come from the Vedas and Upanishads and Puranas, and all of them. So, these forms, when Lord appears as a lion, half man, half lion, or as a Varaha, it is not like any other form. It is not like the ordinary form of a human being or like a pig or a boar, like that. Because that Lord is Aja, because it comes with itself, same Satchidananda form, Satchidananda body. That's why it is Ajasya, Akartu. A contradiction is put there. You are unborn, but yet you are born in this world. You don't do any activity, yet you do activity. So when does the Lord do activity? To please his devotees, he does activity. Like, is he, does he need to become a driver of a chariot to earn some remuneration to fill up his belly? Why should he become driver of Arjuna? Does he need to become king of Dwaraka to rule this world? No? He doesn't need anything. But he takes up these roles for the pleasure of his devotees. He takes his roles. So, great devotees like Kunti Maharani have analyzed the Lord appearing in this world, like the sun rising in the east and setting in the west, without being affected by the ocean or by the horizon. So when the Lord appears in this world, he says here, Yo Maam Ajam Anadimcha Veti, means one who knows the truth about my appearance. Such a person, and also Loka Maheshwaram, one who knows that I am the proprietor of everything that exists. Asam Moodaha. So the word Sam Mooda is used in Bhagavad Gita many places. And also Asam Mooda is used. Yo Maam Eva Asam Moodo Janati Purushottamam Sa Sarvaved Bhajati Maam Sarva Bhavena Bharata. Elsewhere it comes. Yamam Eva Asam Moodo. Moodata means foolishness. Asam Mooda means freedom from foolishness. What is foolishness? To be blind to see the Lord's greatness is called as foolishness. That's like when a car comes in the street, sometimes you have seen a dog chasing. Once a dog was chasing our sumo practically 3 kilometers. Bow, 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 bow. It was chasing after the sumo. Long distance. And sumo was going very fast and he never left it. Because sometimes a dog thinks this is a big animal, which is now, coming to compete with me. He thinks like that. He doesn't know. He's a mooda. He cannot see the soul in the body. So people who are dull-headed, they cannot see the soul to be different from the body. And people who can even see the soul to be different from the body, they cannot understand Krishna to be the supreme soul, they are also categorized under the same division of moodha. They are also considered fools. Namam dushitana moodha, Krishna says, so they are also considered as grossly foolish, one who cannot distinguish between the jiva and the supreme soul. All over the scriptures, we find how the Lord is the supreme source of everything that exists. Here, Prabhupada quotes this verse, Veti Loka Maheshwara, which means one should know that Lord Krishna is the supreme proprietor of the planetary systems of the universe. He was existing before the creation, and he is different from his creation. All the demigods are created within this material world. But as far as Krishna is concerned, it is said that he is not created. Therefore, Krishna is different even from the great demigods like Brahma and Shiva. In fact, he is the creator of Brahma and Shiva and all of the demigods. So he is a supreme person. In the Mahapanishad, the very first verse is, Yekoha Vai Narayana Asit. That's the first verse. Yekoha Vai means, at the dawn of creation, there was only Lord Narayana. Na Brahma, na Ishano, na Somo, na Agni, na Apo, na Suryo, na Surya, na Nakshatrani, all are there. There were no stars in the sky, there was no sun, there was no moon, there was no air, there was no fire, no water, nothing. Like this, not Brahma, na Ishano, not even Shiva. Nobody was existing. And only one person was resting in the cosmos. Who was it? Yekohavai Narayana Asit. Narayana was. And then, in Narayana Upanishad you find what we call as Purushottama. He is Lord Narayana. It explains that Purushottama, Narayana, he desired Akamayata Srijeti Jiva. He desired that let all the jivas get their bodies. All the jivas desiring to get different bodies, let them get different bodies. He desired like that. And then it says, it was just a desire in his mind. And immediately after he desired, everything happened subsequently. It explains. Narayana Brahma, Narayana Brahma Jayate, then Brahma was created. Narayana Prajapati Prajayate, Narayana Indro Jayate, Narayana Ashtavasvav Jayate, Narayana Ekadasha Rudro Jayate, Narayana Dwadasha Aditya, all are said after that. So in the beginning nobody was there, only Narayana existed, but then they all came later. Narayana Brahma Jayate. So Narayana Brahma came, and so Narayana Shiva came, so Narayana Prajapatis, the representatives of mankind, they appeared. All the sages appeared, and then the eight Vasus appeared, and then the 11 Rudras appeared. Everyone appears later on. These are not clearly given in the Upanishads. Sometimes people think Upanishads are talking about some impersonal Brahman, impersonal thing. Here we find Upanishads talking about one supreme, Narayana. And the scriptures also say that the Narayana comes from Krishna. When Vishnu Pitama was lying in the arrow bed, at that time Krishna told all Pandavas to dress in beautiful garments and jewelry, come in golden chariots to meet Vishnu Pitama and take some good advice from him regarding ruling the world. At that time, Bhishma, being a great devotee of Lord Krishna, he decided to leave his body according to the Ichamriti. He desired to leave his body. But he wanted to see Krishna in front of him and leave the body. So Krishna also came with all the Pandavas. And Pandavas heard some sermons from Bhishma. And after which Bhishma was speaking to the Pandavas. And while talking to them, he wanted Lord Krishna to be in his friend. And exactly at the time of Bhishma leaving his body, Krishna stood right in front of him. And Bhishma wanted to see him in the four-handed form, because he was related to the Lord eternally in Vaikuntha, in the four-handed form. Of Shankh Chakra Gada, the Lord was holding the wheel, he was holding the Shankh and the Gada, the mace and the lotus. The Lord appeared in front of him. And taking his darshan with his eyes fixed on him, Bhishma left his body. But before he left his body, he tells the Pandavas, Yesha Vai Bhagavan Sakshat Adyo Narayana Puman. He says, my dear Pandavas, this Krishna who is amidst all of you, Yesha Vai Bhagavan Sakshat, this is the Param Bhagavan. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Adyo Narayana Puman, he said. Adyo means original Narayana. Adyo Narayana Puman, he is the original Narayana, he said. So, Krishna is the original Vishnu or original Narayana. Prabhupada writes that in many places. Krishna is the original Vishnu. And we can see that many, many Narayana forms come from Krishna. Like here Krishna says, even the demigods get bewildered by seeing me. Name Vidu Saragana. He said in the previous verse. So, we can see that once when Brahma was bewildered, Krishna assumed many forms of covered boys. Isn't it? You all know the pastime how when Brahma stole the covered boys and calves. So Krishna expanded into those many covered boys and those many calves. And they all were looking exactly like those covered boys and calves. And they went home. And the parents loved the children very much. And then, after 1 year, when Brahma had turned back and saw these covered boys and cows playing with Krishna, he was surprised. How is it that there are two sets of covered boys and two sets of calves? That is the meaning of mudata, bewilderment comes. Even the first created living being, Brahma, can be put into bewilderment. What to speak of as tiny, insignificant living entities? Brahma is one of the first created living beings. And here he was, his head was reeling when he saw two sets of covered boys and two sets of calves. And he couldn't make out which is what, which is true, how it became multiplied. And then Krishna, in order to help him come out of his bewilderment, then he transformed all those forms of covered boys and calves into Vishnu forms. They were all transforming into 400 Krishna forms, the Chandra Chakra and everything. So Prabhupada writes that here we can understand that Krishna manifested all those forms into Vishnu forms, and that goes to show that Krishna is the source of Vishnu also, all the Vishnu forms also. That is why when it says Ekohavai Narayana Asit, that means he talks about the material creation. He doesn't talk about the spiritual creation. Narayana is resting and from him everything comes. But Lord Krishna already has expanded into Narayana for performing this creation. Sometimes people doubt, probably Shiva is God. Krishna is not God. Some people get doubts between Narayana and Krishna. And some people get doubts between Shiva and Krishna. sometimes. Like we see in the pastime of Samudra Manthan, Vishnu practically supported the demigods and demons totally, we can say totally, because he gave them the Mandara Parvat when they were carrying it. Many of them fell on the ground. Many of the demigods even died under the Mandara Parvat because it fell, slipped and fell. Someone broke their legs. And then Lord came, he picked up the Mandara Parvat and kept it on the back of Garuda and took it ahead. Because he's omnipotent, he could do that. Then he took it to the middle of the ocean and then gave them the Vasuki to churn. Vasuki is a snake, which he gave for churning the Mandara with the Mandara Parvat, and Vasuki they churned. Lord became the Kurma at the bottom, became Ajita in the top, gave such a pivotal night support. And churning was going on. Many, many things came out and Lord gave it to different people. At one time when the halahal came, the halahal was killing the people. Many of them were dying. Many of them were suffocating. You have the 8th canto of the Jaya. I wanted to quote one verse from that. So when halahal came, then all the demigods and demons who were always taking help from Vishnu, they went to Lord Shiva. Now you may wonder, why should they go to Shiva? Why not to Vishnu? Can't Vishnu take the halahal and save the demigods? Or was he incompetent to save the demigods from halahal? Now the demigods are offering so many prayers to Lord Shiva, that you are very great, you are, you know, please save us. So of course Shiva also heard all the prayers, and and you can see what Lord Shiva says after hearing all the prayers of the demigods. He saying, Lord Shiva said, "My dear Bhavani, just see how all these living entities have been placed in danger because of the poison produced from the churning of the ocean of milk. It is my duty to give protection and safety to all living entities struggling for existence. Certainly it is the duty of the master to protect his suffering dependents. People in general, being bewildered by the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are always engaged in animosity towards one another. But devotees, even at the risk of their own temporary lives, try to save them." So he is telling about himself that as a devotee, it is my duty to save the life of others. And then he is saying, see, this is a very famous verse. You all can repeat after me.
पुंसः कृपयतो भद्रे सर्वात्मा प्रियते हरिः प्रीते हरौ भगवती प्रियेऽहं सचराचरः तस्मादिदं गरं भुञ्जे प्रजानां स्वस्तिरस्तु मे.
This is 8.7.40. So here he says, "My dear gentle wise Bhavani, when one performs benevolent activities for others, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari is very pleased. And when the Lord is pleased, I am also pleased, along with all other living creatures. Therefore, let me drink this poison for all the living entities may thus become happy because of me." So this is the last verse what Shiva speaks. He says, Pumsaha Kripayato Bhadre Sarvatma Priyate Hari. Then Lord Hari is pleased. Prite Haro Bhagavati. When Lord Hari is pleased, then I am also pleased, he says. So he, Lord Shiva, performs this great feat of drinking this poison not to show that I am greater than Narayana or I am greater than Krishna. But why did he perform it? For the pleasure of Lord Hari. Now, This one verse practically solves the whole problem of wondering who is God. Whether Hari is God or Hara is God. Who is God? Whether Lord Shiva is God or Vishnu is God. So Lord Krishna is so kind that he doesn't take all the credit always himself. Sometimes he derives great joy in giving credit to his devotees. Like now, Lord could have easily taken the poison, but then he saw that Lord Shiva is present. Okay, let me give the glory of saving this suffering soul to Lord Shiva. So he told all the demigods, yes, you all go and pray to him. And Shiva, being a great devotee, duly acknowledges the greatness of Lord Hari. He doesn't say that, okay, Lord Hari has sent you here because he is incompetent. Probably he couldn't do the job, so I will do it for you. He doesn't say that. He is saying that, yes, I will drink the poison for the pleasure of Lord Hari. When he is pleased, then everyone is pleased. So to give pleasure to Lord Hari, Lord Shiva drank this poison. Only foolish people argue that because Shiva drank the poison, he is God. That way, Arjuna is sitting on the backside and Krishna is riding the chariot. Arjuna must be considered God. Because Krishna is subordinate to him and driving his chariot. So we can understand from the various illustrations given in the scriptures. And one should have a conviction about the truth. Like I was telling you today from the Maha Upanishad and Narayana Upanishad. At the dawn of creation, only the Lord was present. Everyone else was not created. Later on, Brahma was created. From Brahma, Shiva was created. And the Prajapatis were created. Mansa Putras of Brahma. From Brahma's tongue, from Brahma's hand, from Brahma's forehead, from Brahma's chest. From different portions of Brahma's body, many were created like that. And then gradually the creation continued. So, Lord Krishna is the prime entity in the whole creation. There was no one before him. Ahamevasamevagre nanyat asatparam. He says that to Brahma also in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There is a discussion between Brahma and Narada in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is a very interesting conversation. Chapter 5. Here it is. It is 2.5.2. 2.5.2 Bhagavatam. Very nice discussion. Here Narada is asking this question. Yadrupam jatatatishtanam jatasashtamidam prabhu yatsamsam yatparam yatcha tattatvam badatatvatah. My dear father, please describe factually the symptoms of this manifest world. What is its background? How is it created? How is it consumed? How and under whose control is all this being done? When I saw this question, I thought, many parents will be faced with this question from their children. Anybody who is a father or a mother will know. Children ask this question. Who created this world? What is its background? How is it created? How is it conserved? Isn't it? When you ask this question to your physics professor, he will say, Big Bang. And he will make a big bang of your brain. And you will be left with no brain in the head. But Brahmaji was not a Big Bang physics professor. You can see what Brahmaji says. Of course, Narada is continuing his question. The next. Sarvam hetat bhavan veda bhuta bhavya bhavat prabhu kar amalakavar vishvam vijnana avasitam tava. My dear father, all this is known to you scientifically, vijnana avasitam tava. Because whatever was created in the past, whatever will be created in the future, or whatever is being created at present, as well as everything within the universe is within your grip, just like a walnut. Kar amalaka vat vishwam vijnana avasitam tava. Just like amalaka fruit, you can hold firmly in your hand. Like that you are keeping this whole universe in your grip, my dear father. Because I am seeing you that every day you are creating so many living beings, and you are creating so many planets, and putting everyone in proper places. It seems there is nobody above you. You appear to be supreme. Yadvijnano yadadharo yadparastvam jadat makah ekastrajasi bhutani bhutai reva atma majaya. My dear father, what is the source of your knowledge? Where did you get your knowledge? Under whose protection are you standing? And under whom are you working? What is your real position? Do you alone create all entities within the material elements by your personal energy? Now he is asking his father, Brahma. Narada is asking. It seems that you are creating everything and running everything. It seems you are the supreme boss. There is nobody above you. Huh? You only do everything, or is there anybody to whom you also report? Huh? Somebody above you, just like this Yamadutta went and asked the Yamaraj. Huh? Are you supreme? Or is there anyone who is superior to you, to whom you have to report of? Any sane person will immediately admit that I am not supreme. Above me, there is a supreme being to whom I report. That's what Yamaraj did. Huh? And here also Brahma will do that. So in this way, after asking these questions, you see Brahma has many questions like this. Then Brahma begins to answer here. Lord Brahma said, my dear boy Narada, being merciful to all, including me, you have asked all these questions because I have been inspired to see into the purpose of the Almighty Personality of Godhead. It's a very deep answer. He is saying that being merciful to all, including me, he is saying that you ask this question. Whenever a devotee of the Lord hears a question that makes him speak about the Lord, then the devotee feels jubilant, very joyful. Whenever anybody asks question, even to you, some question to you, you should feel very happy. Why? Not because of your capability to tell the answer, but because of being given an opportunity to purify your heart by glorifying the Lord. You should feel happy when somebody asks us any questions. Brahma is saying that thank you for this question. You have very mercifully asked this question to me, and you are inspiring me to, I am feeling very great inspiration to talk about the glories of Krishna. And he is saying, whatever you have spoken about me is not false. Because unless and until one is aware of the personality of Godhead, who is the ultimate truth beyond me, one is sure to be illusioned by observing my powerful activities. He is saying that, my dear boy Narada, you are thinking I am God, and it is not surprising to me because you are a fool. But you are only seeing that, seeing my great power in doing activities, because you are not seeing anything beyond this. Like that. Like, you know, whenever I used to give class, somebody will tell me, Prabhuji, your class was so wonderful. I want you to be my guru. Some people will say. Then I'll tell him, I'll take you to my guru. You will see what a guru means. So people don't know, when people haven't seen people greater than us, they may think very high of us. So when they see, that's the way the parampara was. Our guru and his guru and his guru. More and more and more powerful. At last the Lord himself is there in the receptive line, giving the knowledge. So here Brahma is telling, it's not surprising, Narada, that you are talking of me to be God, because you haven't seen anybody better than me. I am doing some miracle, creating something, you are seeing that and becoming surprised. But it is, by this he is giving an indirect indication that you are like a frog in the well. You don't know anything better than me. But there is one supreme who is beyond me. So he is saying, this is a very famous verse, please all of you repeat.
Yena svarochisha vishvam,
yena svarochisha vishvam,
rochitam rochayamyaham,
rochitam rochayamyaham,
yatakogner yatasomo,
yatakogner yatasomo,
yataksha grahatarakaha.
I create after the Lord's creation by his personal effulgence, known as Brahma Jyoti. Just as when sun manifests its fire, the moon, the firmament, the influential planets and the twinkling stars also manifest their brightness. What he means here, as soon as the sun rises in the sky, immediately all the other luminaries like the stars and the moon and all the light giving substances, they get their light from the sun. And then they also give out light. In the same way, when Lord Krishna shines, when he has the powers, I borrow powers from him and I also give out power. So somebody is like a 10 watt bulb, a 50 watt bulb, 100 watt bulb, 1000 watt bulb, and they all are showing their powers. Just, how much watt is it? This one? 30 watts, that's all. That's 20 watt. Maybe you can have 100 watt. You can have 100 watt, you can have 500 watt. So they may be more and more powerful. But can any of these birds stand in front of the sun? Nowadays they make this dome light in houses, you see, and the doorway they put it. From distance it looks as if the moon has come down. When you come near, you know it's no better than, you know, it's a size football. But can you compare that to your moon? Or can you compare this to your sun? No matter how bright they be. In the same way, he is saying, I am Brahma, of course I am creating, but don't compare me to God, because he is the original sun. And the original sun gives light to all these objects. Similarly, the Lord has the original powers, and he gives power to all of us. So that is Brahma, Indra, Chandra, Varuna, Vayu, everyone. He is the one who supplies power to everyone. In this way, and then he chastised him also. He said, Tasmai Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Dhimahi Yanmayaya Durjaya Mam Vadanti Jagadguru. He said, oh my dear Lord, what can I say? He said, foolish people call me God, not understanding, not having the eyes to see your greatness. Like that he prayed to the Lord. Some similar prayer was prayed by Yamaraj also. After talking to all the Yamadutas and chastising them, then Yamaraj also talked to the Lord directly. Oh my dear Lord, I am very sorry. My messengers have come and punished your servant. It was only my mistake. Like that he admitted. Similar thing Brahmaji also does here.
You can see.
In this way, there is a declaration in all the scriptures that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, the source of all that exists. That's why in this verse, Yo Maam Ajam Anadincha Veti Loka Maheshwaram Asam Mood Asam Artyeshu. All of us are called as Martya. But one who understands that Krishna is supreme and has full conviction in that truth, such a person is not counted amongst Martya. He stands above the Martya, because he becomes eligible to return back home, back to Godhead. Sarva Pavai Pramuchyate. So Prabhupada devotes one full paragraph on explaining how, what is auspiciousness and what is inauspiciousness in this world. So here he is explaining here, anything done under the direction of Krishna is transcendental. It cannot be contaminated with material reactions, which may be auspicious or inauspicious. The conception that there are things auspicious and inauspicious in the material world is more or less a mental concoction, because there is nothing auspicious in the material world. Everything is inauspicious, because the very material nature is inauspicious. We simply imagine it to be auspicious. Real auspiciousness depends on the activities in Krishna consciousness, in full devotion and service. So this is a point he is trying to make here. So many people think, many people even argue, if God is all good, why there is inauspiciousness in this world? So one answer is that when you take your turn away from God, about turn, then you see your shadow. Similarly, in this world also there is inauspiciousness because you have turned away from God. But even if something is apparently considered inauspicious, if it is connected to Krishna, it is not inauspicious. For example, Vasudeva was personification of honesty. And Kamsa had complete faith in Vasudeva's honesty. In fact, he agreed to spare the life of Devaki only because Vasudeva promised to give every single child to Kamsa. And he did so. He also gave every single child. When the eighth child was born, and Vasudeva knew that this eighth child is none other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, then even the personification of honesty, Vasudeva, he cheated. How he cheated? As soon as the Lord was born, the Lord told him, my dear Vasudeva, You take me across the Yamuna and take me to Gokul. And you have to exchange this child. So we find that Vasudev, as soon as he took the child in the hand, immediately the jail doors opened. And all the people were fast asleep, the jail keepers were fast asleep. Now what should Vasudev do? Well, should Vasudev hand over the child to Kamsa, or should he take the child to Gokul? What should he do?
Listen to the Lord.
Although he knew that this is dishonesty. This is the meaning of a pure devotee. A pure devotee is simply a puppet in the hands of the Lord. Let the whole world call him a dishonest person, a cheater, a traitor, a person who has given up the dharma. He never cared for that. He knew that Lord wants me to do this. Although dishonesty in general is considered inauspicious. But when Lord told him that you break your word that you gave to Kamsa and you take me to Gokul, and he doesn't progress.
It's auspicious. So we can see all the great Vaishnavas, they stand on a platform of Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness. So Prahlad Maharaj saw his own father being killed in front of his eyes. But he glorified the Lord Narasimhadeva with choice poetry for having killed his demoniac father. Modeta Sadhrati Vrishika Sarpahatya, he said that. Even a pious person is Modeta Sadhrati, even Sadhu, saintly person is pleased when envious miscreants are killed, like a Vrishika or Sarpa. So when demons are killed, it is for the very,
so
that is the platform of a pure devotee. He sees the sees what is giving pleasure to the Lord. So a common man cannot understand what is auspicious and inauspicious. According to him, people always consider the material success to be auspicious. Isn't it? Anything, any material success devoid of God also people consider it to be auspicious. Like our son got a foreign chance. He got a scholarship of God. Oh, it's very auspicious. Or the son stood first in the sports. So people consider this very auspicious. It's very wonderful. But actually these are not considered auspicious if they don't have a connection to Krishna. They have to have some connection to Krishna, otherwise it's not auspicious. Of course the son is a devotee. He is going to go abroad and he is going to come back and he is going to earn a lot. He is going to make a temple for Krishna. And he is going to use his energies, his intelligences, all his resources in Krishna service. Then it can be considered auspicious. Otherwise, without service to Krishna, nothing can be considered auspicious in this world. The word Mangal, Mangal Karyalay, the Mangal Karyalay they put because the marriage itself is considered auspicious. But the marriage has to be Vedic. Then it is auspicious. If the husband and wife come together for a spiritual purpose, then it is actually Mangal. But if husband and wife, man and woman come together simply looking at superficial attraction, sometimes the parents are more concerned about conducting a Vedic type of marriage than the son and the daughter-in-law. They just namesake, they come and go. It happens with especially people who live abroad many times. So they just, for the sake of parents, they just come together on that day and go. So how is it a Mangal thing? How can it be considered auspicious? So here Prabhupada is saying, in order to emphasize this point, that anyone who understands Krishna to be supreme, they will strictly abide by Krishna's instruction, even if it appears to be inauspicious. Like for Arjuna, killing his own kinsman was appearing to be inauspicious. So Prabhupada writes about this point because as soon as you understand, Yo Maam Ajam Anadim Cha Vetti Lokka Maheshwaram, anybody who understands this, Asam Moodaha, Dejikam Asam Moodaha, for them nothing is auspicious, nothing inauspicious. Anything that Krishna wants is auspiciousness. Gopi is never worried what will happen to my mother, father, brother, sister, husband, what will they talk about us when they went to the forest to dance with Krishna. Isn't it? They never bothered. That is considered inauspiciousness from a worldly viewpoint. But they were beyond the platform. So we can give innumerable examples like that to show how a devotee understands what is real auspiciousness. Only a devotee can understand Krishna, because Krishna reveals himself only to his devotee. Now we come to the previous verse, then that will be very easy for us to appreciate this. Name vidu suragana.
Name vidu suragana.
Prabhavam namaharshayah.
Prabhavam namaharshayah.
Ahamadirhi devanam.
Ahamadirhi devanam.
Maharshinam cha sarvashah.
Maharshinam cha sarvashah.
Neither the host of the demigod nor the great sages know my origin or opulences. For in every respect, I am the source of the demigods and sages. This word viduhu or veti is often used in the scriptures when it talks about the supreme truth. Like there is a verse that says, dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam nave vidu krishayona videva nasi dhamukya asura manushya kuto nividyatar charana deha. There also the word viduhu is used. Nave viduhu krishayah na abideva. The devatas, the demigods cannot know me, the rishis cannot know me. Even the vidyadharas, charanas, kinnaras, they all cannot know me, the Lord says. It's not possible for them to know me. Now somebody may say, Maybe the demigods are not able to know the Lord because they are impure. Their heart is full of material desires. They want to enjoy life. Because of that, probably they may not be able to know. But the rishis and the munis who have become free from all material desires, they should be able to capture the Lord. But the Lord says no. That is also not possible. He says, Name vidu suragana prabhavanna maharishayah ahamadrihi devana maharishinanta sarvashah. Even the rishis, munis, even they cannot understand me also. It's not possible for them also to understand me. And you can easily see this fact, what Lord is saying here, how the demigods can be bewildered by seeing Krishna. What is the bewilderment that often takes place? The demigods think of him to be an ordinary human being. Like once Indra considered Krishna to be an ordinary boy, especially when he was very proud. When Indra Puja was not performed, so Indra chastised Krishna. He called him as Balisham, Vachalam, Balisham, Stabdham, Agnyam. These are the words which he called him. Vachalam means a talkative boy. Balisham means a boy who is like, who is childish, who is foolish. Stabdham, Stabon, Panditam, Panditam Aninam means he thinks he is very great. Krishna Martyam Upashitya Gopame Chakrarapriyam. He said, these Vrajavadis have taken shelter of this mortal Krishna, he said. Krishna Martyam Upashitya Gopame Chakrarapriyam. They have displeased me. So, the great leader of the demigods like Indra can be so bewildered in understanding Krishna's supremacy. And he was scolding Krishna. So, the Acharyas, they love Krishna so much that they cannot tolerate hearing any blasphemy against the Lord. So they have twisted and turned the meaning of Indra's chastisement towards Krishna. So they say Vachalam. So instead of calling him a talkative, Acharya says that he is very expert in talking. Vachalam. Vachalam. Balisham. Balisham means he is very innocent. Masum. Masum Radhika. He is very innocent. They call him as Balisham means. And then Stabdham means who is very determined. You call him as very determined in anything he does. Pandita Maninam means he is always very famous among the learned people. Pandita Maninam. All the Pandits they want him. Bhagavan Krishna both want him. Pandita Maninam. Like that they have given very nice meaning, positive meanings to Indra's assessment. That doesn't make Indra a good person. Because he didn't call Krishna with that mentality. Everyone knows that. No? So in this way, Indra was bewildered at that time. Later on, Krishna taught him a good lesson. Indra prayed to Krishna. Later on, the prayers he tells Krishna, "My dear Krishna, you are not just a controller. You are also a spiritual master of the whole world." He says, "You know why? Because if you were only a controller, you would have caught hold of my neck and bit me severely for the mistake I did. I was blaspheming you. I was torturing the Vajavasis with heavy rains and everything. But you are such a wise God that you stopped the rains, you thwarted my plan in torturing the Vajavasis. That was your intelligence. In this way, you totally smashed my ego to dust. In this way, when I was defeated, when my ego was smashed, then I became very humble. And now I am coming and standing in front of you. I am feeling such a shame on my part. That is why you are a spiritual master. A spiritual master does not exercise only the power to control his disciple. But he behaves with the disciple in such an intelligent way that the disciple gives up his false ego and feels himself very much ashamed and seeks forgiveness from the guru. That is the meaning of a guru. Guru is not one who says, "I am in a superior position, I will catch your neck and I will slap you or beat you." He doesn't control like that. He makes us realize the fault, our own folly. So Indra told Krishna, "You are a guru, a spiritual master. Because you have not only controlled me, see what will happen if you just control a person? Like you have seen these gundas in the market sometimes. Sometimes they come and collect vasool from people. Isn't it? You know that this person is very powerful, better you give him 10 rupees and send him away. Isn't it? So that only is physical power. You don't have actual respect for the person. Nor do you become free from your disease of the heart, namely the false pride. Krishna would have done that also. Krishna would have sent his chakra, the Indra. Indra seeing the Chakravarti would have become frightened and would have just surrendered. But he didn't do that. He very wisely subdued his false ego. So Indra appreciated that later on. And Indra was so much regretful. He said, "Why does Krishna enough is enough? I want to give up my Indra post. I just want to be surrendered soul. Just I fall at your feet. Take away all my post. Take my Airavat. Take my position, power, gold, silver, everything. I just want to be a beggar." And Krishna said, "No, you don't have to. My dear Indra, you may go now. Be in your position. But never forget the fact that I am supreme and you are working on my behalf. Always remember the fact that you are my representative." In that way, Krishna gave him good advice and sent him back. Like that. Similarly, even Brahma was bewildered. We see in the Narasimha Leela, after Lord Narasimhadev appeared, when Narasimhadev killed Hiranyakashipu, after that he was still roaring. Anybody could see Narasimhadev's anger. And it was heard in all the three worlds. And all the demigods, they were looking at one another, they were very, very afraid. How to pacify the Lord? It seems that the Lord was extremely angry because his Lord came to know how Hiranyakashipu tortured Prahlad. The Lord was still roaring like a thunder. He could not tolerate. Even after killing such a nasty way, he tore the body of Hiranyakashipu and wore the intestine as a garland. His mane was tainted with blood. Still the Lord was raging with anger. And Brahma, Indra, Chandra, everyone is standing there. And they all are standing at a long distance far away. Nobody can dare to come near the Lord. But just now the Lord has killed. Nobody knows what he will do. Anybody has seen an angry person like that? If somebody is very seen, if somebody superior is very angry, then better don't go near. You don't know what he will do. You will get a slap or something. So Lakshmiji was approached by Brahma. Brahmaji told her, "See, it's your husband. Why don't you go and pacify him?" And she said, "I have never seen my husband in the ferocious form." Even she became horrified seeing that form, fearful. So by the power of Leela Shakti, Lakshmiji denied. The Lord, she said, "I cannot go near him. I have no courage to go near him." Then Rama turned to Prahlad and said, "Prahlad, you only call this Lord. Better you go near him and you pacify him." And Prahlad had no fear. In fact, when he went in front of the Lord, he told the Lord, he called him as Kusrutaya. He said, "My dear Lord, I am born in the family of demons. And all these Suravar, all these great devatas who all are arrayed here to offer prayers to you, none of them are ready to come in front of you. They are sending me in front of you. But what is my qualification? Kalayona Yoste." He says, "I am born in a degraded family. But by that order I am coming in front of you. And I am requesting you to be pacified. You have already killed the demon Hiranyakashipu. Please be pacified." And he said, "I am not afraid of your sharp nails. Nor am I afraid of your mouth that is tainted with blood. I am not afraid of the shining eyes which are stealing the luminaries in the sky. I am not afraid of your ferocious form. But I am very afraid of materialistic association in this material world." He offered many wonderful prayers. This is the meaning of a pure devotee. Only such a devotee can understand the Lord. Because he has a very special relationship with the Lord. In fact, Prabhupada says, the Lord is never dangerous to his devotee. The Lord is never dangerous to his devotee at all. So in any form the Lord comes, the devotees are not afraid of him. But on the other hand, other people, Lord says, "Name vidusvaraganaha. Prabhavam namaharshaya." They cannot understand me. See, Prabhupada explains here, even the demigods and great sages cannot understand Krishna. They can understand neither his name nor his personality. And then later he says, scholarship is not the qualification necessary to understand Krishna. Often, it is thought of that one who is very learned in scriptures, one who can quote scriptures, is considered very learned. And he appears to be having some qualification in approaching the Lord. Probably a jnani or a yogi may benefit little bit by being a great scholar. Because jnana is dependent on the knowledge for the sustenance. Knowledge is the food. Whereas the bhakta, who has to access the Lord, he can access him only by devotional service, not by any amount of scholarship. In fact, scholarship often is considered a disqualification for a devotee who becomes unnecessarily proud by dint of that scholarship. That's a very famous verse Lord tells to Uddhava. Anybody knows that? Nayam Atma. No, he says, Na Sankyam Dharma Uddhava. Svadhyaya Tapasyago. Yata Bhakti Mamorjita. Anybody knows the beginning of this verse? Lord tells Uddhava. No one can. Yata Bhakti Mamorjita. He says, my dear Uddhava, the devotion of my devotee touches my heart. That if one is very learned in Sankhya, or one is very learned in, one is doing Svadhyaya, great study of the scriptures, tapas, one is performing penances, tyag, renunciation, even with all these things, no one can attract me with them. As much as one can attract me by pure devotion in his heart. So, Lord clearly declares that such kind of expertise in Shastric study cannot bring one to the Lord. So devotion stands supreme. In fact, Lord has declared throughout the scriptures, through his pastimes, that those who have devotion, even though they are born in low-class families like Chandala, Nishada, Mlecha, Lord loves them. Like for example, there was a great devotee called Guha. He was a Rama Bhakta. So he was a Nishada family, he was a boatman. So when Lord Ram came to meet him, Lord Ram wanted to cross the river and go. But then Guha came and Guha could not leave the Lord. When he saw the Lord, he has been chanting his names every day. Now he is seeing the very same Lord Ram in front of him. So he fell at his feet and he rolled on the ground and received him in his house. He said, at least you should stay for some time and go with us. And Lord stayed with Sita and Lakshman. And the next day the Lord wanted to go. And Guha said, my dear Lord, I agree with you that I am a boatman. I always help people to cross the river and go to the other side. But in your case, I am not going to accept you into the boat so easily. He said, why? And Ram asked him, why would you not allow me? He said, before I allow you, I want to wash your feet. He said, why do you want to wash my feet? He said, I want to see that your feet is thoroughly washed. There should not be even one dust particle in your feet. Because I came to know that when you are walking in the forest, your dust touched a stone. And the stone turned into a beautiful woman, Ahilya. Now also I am afraid that if you come with dust particles into my boat, and if my boat turns into another woman, then how will I do my business? And if you ask me to marry that woman, I have to take care of one more woman, and my boat also won't be there, I can't do my profession. It's better that you wash your feet first, he said. And the Lord gladly agreed. In this way, Guha washed his feet and took charanamrita and drank it and sprinkled on the heads of all his family members. Like that. Such is the sweet relation between Lord and his devotees. And Lord is easily captured by such devotees than those who have very great scholarship. Uddhava is a very special devotee who was simultaneously a scholar who had a very great devotion. If any of us become scholars, we should decide to become following the footsteps of Uddhava. Because he was a great scholar and also a very great devotee. And Lord loved Uddhava so much. One time he told Uddhava, my dear Uddhava, I love you so much that I cannot even love Shiva or Brahma as much as I love you, or even Lakshmi ji. I love you so much, he told Uddhava once. But although Lord loved Uddhava so much, in order to show his love for him, Lord told Uddhava that he go to Vrindavan and give this message to the gopis. And Uddhava did not know anything. He thought that Lord wants me to go as a messenger. Lord is so intelligent. Whatever he does, he is perfect in whatever he does. So Lord wanted Uddhava to go for two reasons. One is, Uddhava also looks like Krishna. Uddhava used to look very similar to Krishna. He had a bluish complexion. He was his cousin. But a great devotee of Krishna also. So Lord thought if Uddhava goes, by seeing him, the gopis may be satisfied that the representative of Krishna has come. And also he can send a message. But most importantly, Lord wanted Uddhava to learn how devotion is superior to scholarship. So, Uddhava was a student of Brihaspati, a very learned scholar. And then he went to Vrindavan and saw the devotion of the gopis. And the last day when he was returning back, he fell at the feet of the gopis and expressed his desire that I want to just become a grass in Vrindavan, so that the gopis, when they are dancing and walking over the grass, I will also get a dust of their feet on my head. Like that he did there. That was his aspiration. So he came to the right conclusion. Ramya Kachitupasana Vajavudu Vargena Vakalpita. The gopis of Vrindavan had such innocent pure devotion to Krishna. They didn't need to be scholars. They have already reached the summit of all religious principles, which is pure loving devotion to Krishna. In fact, our learning the Shastras nicely is only for one purpose, so that it enhances our devotion to Krishna. The Vibhuti Yoga which we are learning now, the purpose of this is to help us understand how great is Krishna and surrender to Him in devotion. That is the whole purpose. Otherwise, scholarship is of no benefit to a growing devotee. The conception of God as some ruling power or as impersonal Brahman can be reached by persons who are in the inferior energy of the Lord. But the personality of Godhead cannot be conceived unless one is in that transcendental position. Like sometimes people say, oh, I can't understand how Krishna is God. Don't be surprised, you can't understand. Because no one can understand. He says that when you are in the material world, you can only at best accept God as some impersonal energy. Some great energy. Even average students, they accept it very easily. You go to your college, when you try to prove God, they say, why are you trying to prove God? We already accept. There is some superior force, there is some superior energy. Everyone accepts. But accept the person Krishna as God, one has to come to the platform of transcendence. Otherwise you can't understand the person Krishna. Because most men cannot understand Krishna in his actual situation, out of his causeless mercy, the Lord descends to show favor to such speculators. But despite Lord's uncommon activities, these speculators, due to contamination of material energy, still think impersonal Brahman to be supreme. Only the devotees who are fully surrendered unto the Lord can understand by His grace that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. The devotees of the Lord do not bother about the impersonal Brahman conception of God. The faith and devotion bring them to surrender immediately unto the Supreme Lord. So, here Prabhupada explains in conclusion that anybody can accept impersonal Brahman to be God. Why people accept impersonal Brahman to be God? That satisfies you. You can worship anybody you want. You can worship Ganesh, you can worship Durga, you can worship Krishna, Vishnu, Shiva, anybody. And say that ultimately all these are different manifestations of the impersonal Brahman. Very easy to say that. But the truth is not that. You can't conveniently make our own philosophy to fit our tiny brain. We have to accept what the truth is. The truth says, God is one supreme Purushottama. As I said, Eko Havai Narayana Asi, that is the supreme truth. Lord is existing alone. And then He creates everyone else later. So, only by Lord's mercy can one understand Him, it is said. In Puri, Jagannath Puri, Gopinath Acharya, who was a brother-in-law of Sarvam Bhattacharya, he was living, and for the first time, Lord Chaitanya came to Puri after sannyas. He went straight to the temple, and when he saw Lord Jagannath at a distance, he ran towards Him to go and embrace Him. But on the way He stumbled and fell on the ground, and He fell unconscious. And immediately the servants came there. The servant thought that He is a madman. So he took a stick about to beat Him. Then Sarvabhattacharya came and stopped that servant. And He went near Him, and then He touched His body, and He tested His body, and He found that this person is experiencing the deepest loving emotions of a pure devotee, like the gopis. And later on He found, by keeping a cotton here, the cotton was vibrating. Then He understood the life is there. Then He lifted the body of Lord Chaitanya along with servants and others. He took Him to His house. And in the afternoon, late afternoon, they all arrived. Jan, Prabhu and all of us arrived. And they searched Him and at last came to the house of Sarvam Bhattacharya. And later on when they sang Lord Krishna's names, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got up after that. Then Sarvam Bhattacharya told Him that you have to be very careful. we should never go alone to a new place like this. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also was very humble. He said, you are like my father and you have studied Vedanta, so you are like my guru also. And thank you for protecting me. And I have come to a new place like this Puri, so I will never go to the temple without you. I will always go with you. And then Swami Bhattacharya told others to take him to the ocean for bath, and he said, give him Jagannath Ritusa. And after they all went, Swami Bhattacharya told Gopinath Acharya. Somehow, I don't know why, my heart has developed a great attachment to this sannyasi. He looks very beautiful. And he appears so innocent. And he is so pure-hearted. And the way that he is dealing with me, it is increasing my love for him. And he said, but I am only very worried that he is so young in age and he is so beautiful. If one is very young and has a beautiful body, he will become very attractive to women. And if he does not hear Vedanta, then he will fall down from his platform of sannyasi. So I am planning to teach him Vedanta. And when Gopinath Acharya heard it, he said, what are you saying? You are going to teach the Lord Vedanta? In fact, I can tell you that you are very fortunate to even have his darshan, because he is none other than Krishna himself. And Swami Bhattacharya argued back. He said, no, I can agree that he is a very great person, very great sannyasi. By the way, tell me, in which parampara has he taken sannyasi diksha? He asked him. He has taken from Bharati sampradaya. Oh, that means he is an inferior sannyasi. You tell him to hear Vedanta from me, then I will give him sannyas diksha. I personally will give him sannyas diksha from Saraswati Sampradaya. And Gopinath Acharya heard it, he became so angry. He said, you are blinded by the usual energy of the Lord. You just cannot see the truth. You are going to give him sannyas. Who can give sannyas to the Lord? And then he said, only a person who has achieved the mercy of the Supreme Lord, a tiny trace of Lord's mercy, only such a person can understand the Lord. Then Swami Bhattacharya laughed and said, we are just having philosophical discussion. Why do you become so angry with me? You speak from the Shastra if you want to prove that he is God. And then he said, according to the Bhagavatam, according to the scriptures, Lord is called as Triyogi. He appears only in Satyayuga, Tretayuga and Dwapara Yuga. In Kaliyuga, Lord does not appear. And how do you say that Chaitanya is God? Again, Gopinath Acharya said, that is why I am telling you, people who are dry speculators like you can never understand him. So he stressed on this point that one who has achieved the mercy of the Lord only can accept that he is supreme. Then Sarvodaya asked him, tell me what is the meaning of achieving his mercy? Then Gopinath Acharya told him, it is very easy to understand that somebody has achieved the Lord's mercy. Because one who has achieved the mercy of the Lord would unhesitatingly accept his supremacy. That is the meaning of achieving mercy. Somebody has developed a pure, innocent faith and devotion that Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And loving him and serving him is the ultimate goal of life. That means that person has achieved the Lord's mercy. That is why Brahma in his prayer also said, तथापि ते देव पदाम्बुजद्वयाम् प्रसादलेशानुगृहीतयेव हि जानाति तत्त्वं भगवन्महिम्नो न चाञ्जये कोऽपि चिरं विचिम्ब. So he said, प्रसादलेश अनुग्रह एव हि. The small trace of Krishna's mercy somebody achieves, then they can have devotion to him. So devotion to Krishna cannot be purchased by scholarship. Not by tapasya, not by swadhyaya, not by renunciation or tyag, not by any amount of endeavor, but only by devotion to him. That is the reason great devotees understand this secret. In that song he sings, you know, Krishna se tumara, Krishna dite paro, tumara shakti ache. Amito Kangala, Krishna Krishna Bhuri, Dhai Tava Pache Pache. He is praying, Krishna says, Tomar, you have Krishna with you, my dear spiritual master. Krishna Ditepa, you have the ability to give Krishna to others. Tomara Shakti Ache, you have that Shakti with you, Krishna Shakti with you. And you can give Krishna, you can offer Krishna to others. Amito Kangala, Krishna Krishna Boli. I am a beggar. Even if I am a millionaire, I am still a beggar. Why? I may be a millionaire in terms of wealth. I may be a millionaire in terms of knowledge. I may be a millionaire in terms of beauty. But I am considered a beggar because I am devoid of Krishna. I am a kangal, Krishna Krishna Boli. So I am shouting Krishna 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 and I am running behind you, begging you to offer me Krishna. So Prabhupada used to emphasize on this point very much. Because in India, when Prabhupada returned to India, he found that the caste Brahmanas were very proud of their Vedic recitation, chanting, Vedic knowledge. Caste Brahmanas were very proud of being Brahmanas. The caste Goswamis were very proud of coming in the lineage of Goswamis. And the Mayavadis were very proud of their knowledge of Upanishads and Vedas. Everyone in India was very proud, thinking very high of themselves, but they didn't know, they didn't have any devotion to Krishna at all. Even those who had Krishna deity and all, they didn't have genuine devotion to Krishna. They were very materialistic. They had no materialistic devotion. Genuine devotion means total dedication. So Prabhupada always taught his disciples. Once Prabhupada taught his disciples the very same thing which I am telling you now. So once Saraswati was playing with a small doll of Krishna, and Prabhupada snatched it from her and kept it with him. And immediately Saraswati started crying like anything. Thousands of tears came from her eyes. And she went from one after another to every devotee there. Did you take my Krishna? Did you see my Krishna? She was asking like that to everyone. And everyone said, no, we didn't see, we don't know. In this way, she was leaving, one devotee gave her a clue. He asked her, Saraswati, who has Krishna? And then she thought of this question. And immediately she responded, Prabhupada has Krishna, she said. Even before seeing Prabhupada, she said, Prabhupada has Krishna. Because Saraswati was convinced that Prabhupada talks about Krishna so much, surely he has Krishna. So, and then, when she turned towards Prabhupada, she saw that Prabhupada is holding a hand like this. So she started trying to open the hand of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada immediately took it back by it. And she was running all around and trying to open. And then at last, she was crying out and weeping tears, and then Prabhupada opened the hand. And she saw the Krishna in Prabhupada's hand. She immediately picked it up, took Krishna up, and started jumping and dancing. And she ran away. So Prabhupada taught two lessons to this wonderful pastime. He taught that unless one is craving for Krishna, one cannot get Krishna. Unless one is eager to meet Krishna so madly, then one cannot achieve Krishna very easily. Once Yadav Swami was giving an example. He was telling, if you have fallen into a well in the forest, and you know that the forest is a remote place and nobody would be passing by, then how would you call for help? So he was imitating a person who has fallen into the well. He said, help, help. He was telling, would you call like that? He said, you will shout from the bottom of your lungs, isn't it? Help! You shout, isn't it? And then anybody, even far away from 10 kilometers far away, person will come running to you.
Like that.
So he said, similarly, Krishna consciousness has to be performed very intensely, seriously. The chanting we do, the reading we do, the preaching and services that we do, it has to be done consciously, intensely, seriously. That was one thing that Saraswati showed. Saraswati was crying for Krishna to meet him. Similarly, Prabhupada also taught how only a pure devotee can award Krishna to us. We cannot get Krishna by our own endeavor. It's not by our qualification that Krishna comes in our life. It's only by pure devotees. That's why Krishna says, Name Vidu Suragana Prabhavam Namaharshe Ahamadevi Devana Maharshi Namaharshe. Even demigods, great demigods who offer choice poetry to Krishna, many of them even see Krishna also. Many of them even face to face see Krishna also. But still they cannot know me, he says. Simply seeing Krishna also is not qualification to know Krishna. Even Duryodhana was also seeing Krishna. But he was not having a proper knowledge of Krishna. But great devotees like Pandavas, like Prahlad, like Dhruva, Draupadi. So many of these devotees exemplify how to approach Krishna in a mode of devotion. Hare Krishna. Anyone? Just like Kardama Muni, Kashyapa Muni, Angira Muni and all. Yes, not all of them are pure devotees. Like if you see Atri Muni can call for anybody who is supreme. All the other came. Actually, there are many sages who have controlled the senses totally. control the mind and senses there. Very powerful. But they haven't achieved pure devotion. There are many sages like that.
Yeah.
Even the sages in science who came to the banks of Ganges when Parikshit was about to die, not all of them were pure devotees. They were all mixed devotees. Mixed with jnana, karma. But pure devotion is jnana, karma, adi, anavritam. Yeah. They are mixed devotees. Many of them. That is why when Parikshit asked this question, Prabhupada says that Parikshit asked them, what is the duty of a dying man? That was one question he asked. Another question is, what are the general religious principles that a person should follow in his life? Two questions he asked. The first question is very important. What is the duty of a dying man? And then all the sages are looking at one another and they were not able to come at a consensus, a conclusion. Because Prabhupada says, just as sometimes the doctors vary in their prescription. The allopathic doctor has one medicine. Homeopathic doctor has another. Ayurvedic doctor has a third medicine. Isn't it? And even amongst allopathic doctors, there is a, sometimes a difference of opinion. Like one doctor has the habit of giving antibiotics for everything. Another doctor gives a mild dose. Isn't it? Similarly, amongst the sages and saints, they were all having different opinions. Somebody thought one should do Jnana Yoga, one should do Ashtanga Yoga, somebody thought one should be doing Hatha Yoga, you know. They were not able to arrive at a consensus. But when Sukadeva Goswami came, what did he give? He told him, Tasma Dharata Sarvatma, Bhagavan Ishwaro Hariye. Shotavya, Kirtavya, Sasvatavya, Chesa, Abhayam, he said. So if you want to attain fearlessness, you have to do only this. Tasmad Bharata Sarvatma, Bhagavan Ishwarokari. Shotavya, you should hear about the Lord first. Glorify His names and pastimes and qualities. Kirtavya, Smartavya, and remember them. So in one of our recent books which is going to come, I devoted one full chapter on this. Cultivating, tell some? Sutra-Vadat, yeah. There is a chapter, 7th chapter on cultivating remembrance of Krishna. That is the cream of the book. In that full, we have devoted so much pages for chanting and remembering. Shrotavya, Kirtavya, Smartavya. If one can do this nicely, intensely, then one can make so much advancement. We have to hear consciously and we have to remember also. We have to recite the names of the Lord very attentively. And we have to remember the Lord in the heart always.